Respect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability.
Today, we want to welcome to the show Brenda Hollingsworth of Edelson & Associates. Brenda has just received a judgment from the Ontario Divisional Court. Brenda, who are your clients?
I represent a family in Ontario whose daughter, sister, is a resident of Rideau Regional Centre, one of the regional centres that are run by the Ontario government for adults with developmental disabilities.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you very much.
You sound pretty happy. You got a ruling yesterday on the group homes problem. Give us your off-the-cuff feeling about it. Can you define the issue for us and give us your feelings on the judgment you received on Thursday?
Sure. First of all, the reaction, it's a mixed reaction. It has to be. What happened in December was we asked the divisional court to do one of two things. The first one was to determine that the Minister of Community and Social Services didn't have the power to close the three remaining facilities that the ministry operates for people with developmental disabilities.
Right.
So that was question number one, and we said, you know, she doesn't have the power.
Right.
Question number two was, if she does have the power, is the current system that the minister had set up for transferring people out of the facilities acceptable? And the specific area of contention was, who gets to decide an appropriate placement? And the system that the minister had set up was to involve the families of the residents in sort of a consultative process.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it was the ministry that got the final say.
Ah.
So in other words, they had a schedule of when they wanted people out.
Right.
And if they had a placement for the person, but the family disagreed, ultimately the minister could decide and move the person anyway.
Right. So the family member or friend of the family who was in the group home for a mental disability could have been put nearby or could have been put across the province.
Right. It was certainly a principle that they would be put nearby.
Mm-hmm.
It was certainly, certainly an angle or a consideration was the proximity to family. The issue was more around facilities.
Quality,
that's right. Not to disparage any existing group homes, but these are probably the most developmentally disabled people.
Of course.
The ones who are still in the institution.
Right.
They are severely disabled. Most of them, a large number, also have other kinds of problems, either physical or emotional. What's called dual diagnosis, a great many of them. So these are people with very special needs.
Right.
And the feeling of the families was that they were being placed in homes without an adequate investigation to whether or not their needs would be met.
Oh, so the different homes, despite the fact there are only three of them left, I gather all the others have been closed in the recent past. The remaining three have varying capabilities or specialties.
The three remaining residents house about 1,000 people.
Right.
And the one in Smith Falls that I was involved in, Rideau Regional Centre, has about 400 left. It's the largest one.
Okay.
And, I mean, just to give you an example, the... most people have a mental age of less than four-year-old.
Right.
IQ of under 40.
Oh, dear.
So these are very, very disabled people.
Right.
And what happened, I mean, in the 60s and 70s, these institutions, and there were 19 of them, were jam-packed with all sorts of people who absolutely could have been accommodated in the community.
Yep.
And, in fact, most of them have been. I think the government will tell you that there have been about 6,000 people repatriated to the community. And there's a reason, we said, that the remaining people haven't been moved to the community.
Right.
And it's because there weren't adequate facilities, training, all of the things that need to accommodate these people's special needs. In the meantime, you've got people, you know, 50, 60, 70, there's a couple of 80-year-olds who have lived in these places their whole lives. And so in addition to the potential loss of sort of facilities, amenities, medical services, you're dealing with the breaking up of a family.
Okay.
The residents themselves are a family.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, they've been together since they were young children. I mean, my aunt is there. I don't know if I told you that, but I have an aunt who's been there since she was under 10.
Right.
She's in her late 50s.
Right.
The applicant in our court proceeding is in her mid-50s, and she arrived at Rideau before she was 6.
I see.
So they've grown up together. They've lived together their whole lives.
Right.
They've had excellent care. So there's that whole dynamic, too.
Yeah, they literally interact in a complementary way after a period of time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you take the example of the applicant, Anne Gray, she tucks her roommate in every night.
Right.
You know, and that roommate is one that she's had for many, many years.
Yeah.
Or you take the people who are nonverbal, and there are many, many of those.
Oh.
And that's, I mean, communicating with someone who's nonverbal is a skill that's acquired over a long period of time.
Right.
When staff changeover or turnover occurs.
Right.
In the ministry-operated facility.
Yeah.
You've got a transition period, and there's lots of staff. Group home setting, some of them are unionized, some of them aren't.
Right.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah. Well, and in fact, their roommates or their, what you call their extended family of fellow patients have become part of their care.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely. There's certainly a therapeutic value to the friendships, too.
Well, I'm not talking to the kind of therapeutic value you get from having a dog or a goldfish either. I'm talking about, as you mentioned, nonverbal communication. Okay, you change staff. Who can communicate with the roommate? Well, if their other roommate isn't there, nobody.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. So that was really like issue number one. And unfortunately, what the court decided was under the letter of the law, the minister does have the authority to close those institutions.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean,
Why was it thought that he did not?
Well, there is a piece of legislation called the Developmental Services Act.
Uh-huh.
And it says basically that the minister may operate, establish, and maintain Schedule 1 facilities, and which are these facilities, and also group homes.
So may establish, operate, and maintain.
And that's right. That sounds like you have an obligation.
Yeah.
But what cases have said in other situations is that establish, operate, and maintain is not inconsistent with close.
Yeah.
But those cases, and those are obviously the cases the government relied on, those cases dealt with specific instances of single schools. So we're not talking about the closure of all schools. Or
a system, yeah.
That's exactly the argument. What we said was, this is the end of a service delivery model.
Right.
You should go back to the legislature.
But, yeah.
I mean,
makes sense to me, too.
Well, sure.
But not to the judge.
Well, and, I mean, it was a panel of 3 judges.
Okay.
And
were they unanimous?
Yes, they were.
Okay.
And the case was, the legislation that they looked at was very similar to the legislation that applied in the school. One was a school and one was a community college. So it's not,
okay.
I mean, the result is not shocking. It's
right.
Disappointing.
Yes.
I certainly think it could have gone the other way. I certainly argued that it should go the other way.
Right.
But, it went the way it went.
All right.
So then we had a second argument, which was that you need the consent
of
family members before the placement.
Oh, so that consulting them, which was agreed to.
Right, isn't enough.
Isn't enough.
Right. If the minister gets the final say,
right,
then that's not enough.
And so you argued for a consensus?
Not even a consensus. We argued that in the end, the resident, or if the resident wasn't capable, and that's the case for most of these people,
right,
then the resident's substitute decision maker, usually a family member, will make the decision.
Did you argue discrimination in that case? Because somebody who isn't disabled would certainly have the decision on where they live.
Well, that's exactly what the judge found. That's almost verbatim what he said in his judgment. Capable adults choose where they live.
Right.
And now for a short break from our interview.